Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app, Star One Credit Union, in your best interest. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Hey there, it's Sasha Coca, and I'm super excited this week because we're bringing you another of our Hidden Gems shows, where we take you to out-of-the-way secret spots across the Golden State, places locals don't always know about, stops you might want to make on a road trip. And this time, we're taking you to an Oakland warehouse full of mannequins.
I was mid-40s when I decided to become the mannequin queen.
And a road in Lancaster that plays a tune when you drive over it.
As a little kid, like, they would try making spooky stories of if you went backwards on it, like something would happen.
Plus, a museum on the Mendocino coast that was started by a quirky TV repairman.
Here, he's attached solar panels to a music box. I think they're wonderful. They're like little kinetic sculptures to me.
It's the California Report magazine. You might not know that California was once home to a booming cotton industry. In fact, we're going to start our road trip at what was once the largest cotton mill west of the Mississippi. It was called the California Cotton Mills, and it was built in Oakland back in 1883. At its peak, 1,500 workers, mostly Portuguese immigrants, were employed at the mill. It was demolished back in 1956 to make way for the Nimitz Freeway, which literally cut through the center of the mill. Now, an unusual business has found a home inside one of the few remaining old buildings from that cotton mill. KQED's Christopher Beal takes us inside.
Welcome to Mannequin Madness. You see, we have mannequins greeting you when you first come in. When we say mannequins, they're not always just mannequins with a head. There's legs. There's feet, there's butts, there's heads. One of these boxes here is just full of heads.
Did you ever envision that you would have a job where you can say things like, and over here is a box full of heads?
No.
That's Judy Henderson. She founded Mannequin Madness, this warehouse full of old mannequins that you can rent or buy. Judy is a flashy and outgoing person with sparkly, manicured nails and a warm smile. She's fashionable, confident, and she runs this business in her retirement.
I'm a proud senior entrepreneur.
Judy is 66 now, but decades ago, she began her career in sales. She worked for a dot-com startup in the early days of the internet. She was a black woman surrounded by all of these successful white entrepreneurs.
All of them were young and male and Anglo. And like, they weren't any smarter than I was, but they were so confident, so resilient.
And they had resources, which was something Judy didn't have. So she kept her nose down and worked hard, always keeping her eye on the horizon, looking for her own entrepreneurial opportunity. It was a fateful exchange on Craigslist one night that would set Mannequin Madness in motion.
I blame it all on Tina. I was actually looking for Tina Turner concert tickets.
Her favorite Tina song is The Best, by the way, and she never did find any tickets.
While looking for concert tickets, I saw a mannequin for sale.
So Judy figured if she couldn't go see Tina, she could stay home and make something sparkly. She dabbled in art, and a bedazzled mannequin seemed kind of fun. So she headed to San Francisco to meet the guy selling the mannequin on Craigslist.
He ran the only mannequin rental business in town, and he just casually mentioned, now that I'm leaving, there won't be a place to rent a mannequin in the Bay Area. Now, at that point, I had never touched a mannequin. I had never worked retail.
But Judy knew from her own search that there was a secondary market for mannequins. And she also saw this as kind of a way to help the planet.
I just knew from my own experience that recycling is something that we should be doing. So I bought all 50 of his mannequins and put them in my backyard and started Mannequin Madness Rental Company. Later on, I found out that department stores would throw mannequins in the trash when they were closing or remodeling, or if the mannequins got out of style or were kind of broken. Mannequins are made out of materials that don't biodegrade. Fiberglass, plastic. Then we've got, even though this is a cloth form here, you see some of the attachment fittings are metal. Metal on the base. There's metal around the arm. So even at this part, but either underneath here is styrofoam, which we know how styrofoam is not to be in the landfill. There's a lot of waste that happens at the store level. That's where we come in. I started making retail stores an offer they couldn't refuse. I would recycle their mannequins for free, saving them on waste disposal fees. I'd come to their location, pick it up, and that gave me inventory. And I went from 50 to 500 mannequins within a 6-month period of time. So now I had enough inventory to not just rent, but to sell.
And Judy did just that. And she ran Mannequin Madness as a side hustle.
Then 9/11 happened. And my dot-com job ended. And, you know, that was such a scary time when we look back now. But instead of being fearful, it made me more fearless. I said, if this is our last days in time, I want to do something I enjoy and that's fun. And I love working with mannequins, as crazy as it is. So rather than look for another job, I decided Mannequin Madness would be my full-time versus my part-time venture.
So Judy moved Mannequin Madness and its 500-plus mannequins from her house to a much bigger location.
Now we're in a 3,200-square-foot warehouse, and it's too small.
Today, Judy manages an ever-evolving inventory of mannequins and mannequin parts, and she rents and sells much of that inventory on the Mannequin Madness website and at her storefront in Oakland.
In the beginning area, in our foyer, we like to have more of the DIY projects that people have done with mannequins. We see button art, decoupage, mosaic, flowers. This has turned into a cupcake stand. Here is our crafting studio where we have weekly classes where people can come in and make a flower crown or fantasy headdress.
At the center of Judy's business these days are classes where people can make their own DIY creations.
We do a lot of education because a lot of our customers are first-time mannequin buyers. And then we also now have art classes. We have mannequin heads that we recycled from a cosmetology school. And we thought, why not have a headdress making class? It's like our version of paint and sip. So instead of, you know, painting, you're designing wearable art. I've seen every cross-section of society coming through here. Every age group, every nationality, every sexual orientation. Burning Man particularly brings them out. And Halloween, that's when I probably get the most creative uses for mannequin for those two big events. Burning Man is like my Christmas.
Mannequin Madness has the public areas in the front, and then the further back you go in the building, it starts to get a little darker and a little quieter.
This is where we have our shipping and receiving department.
Like, you're actually surrounded by boxes of body parts stacked to the ceiling.
This place gets creepy at night. Don't want to be back here when it's
dark. I was going to say.
I asked Judy what she thought of the portrayal of mannequins in Hollywood over the years. Like in the 1987 film Mannequin, where a mannequin played by Kim Cattrall literally comes back to life.
What's the matter? Don't you like your new scarf?
Not especially. What a funny way to say hello.
What the hell's going on?
Where are you on the idea of a mannequin coming back to life?
I think it's cute. But yeah. I really like the Twilight Zone one because it was black and white. It's more spooky.
Spookier.
Yeah.
Like this place at night.
Yes, exactly.
You remember Marcia.
Climb off it. Come on, dear. Marcia.
Some of the accolades and awards that I've got, probably the one that I'm most excited about is I received an award from the Environmental Protection Agency for recycling over 100,000 pounds of mannequins in 1 year.
Oh, look at that.
And that was in 2003, actually. We recycled 3 times that amount now. Getting that award from the EPA, which has such credibility and them to acknowledge that what we're doing is making a difference. Mannequins, they said, do not belong in landfills. So we can touch them, you can see the materials they're made out of, and they would not biodegrade for like thousands of years.
Hanging out with Judy, it's clear that she's driven by her work at an almost spiritual level. Judy resents the idea that being retired means she should sit at home all day. She wants to spend her time giving back to her community.
I want people to realize that secondhand or used does not necessarily mean that it's in disrepair or it's in poor condition. Maybe we will be more conscious about being open to buying things that are secondhand. I like to feel we're giving a new use for something old, kind of like with myself.
That was mannequin queen Judy Henderson talking with KQED's Christopher Beal at Mannequin Madness in Oakland. If you're looking for a mannequin yourself, you can visit Judy at the warehouse. It's open 3 days a week to the public. We've got a link on our website, californiareport.org. For our next hidden gem, we're headed to the Western Mojave Desert, to Lancaster, which is a little over an hour north of LA. We're going to check out a road that's supposed to sound like this when you drive over it. You might recognize the William Tell Overture by Rossini, probably better known as the theme to The Lone Ranger. Honda, the car company, built the road back in 2008 as part of a TV commercial for the Honda Civic. Here are some of the Honda workers humming the tune. Reporter Claire Wiley tells us what it was like to drive on the road and try to make some music with her tires.
Drive out of town and it gets pretty desolate. There are a few clusters of RVs, but the biggest attraction is a tiny airfield with an old-school diner in the lobby. It feels like California from 40 years ago. And locals all have a story about the quirky musical road.
As a little kid, like, they would try making spooky stories of if you went backwards on it, like something would happen.
That's Marlene, who I met in Lancaster's Museum of Art and History.
One time when my brother started driving, he did go backwards on it, so it sounded a little odd. I'm not gonna lie, it sounded a little scary.
Colin works at the local library.
It was just kind of a fun little thing. I just think it's kind of cool to just have this whimsical thing out there.
And Sandra is a waitress at that diner I mentioned.
Back in like 2011, when I moved back out here with my friends, they took me on that road. So we went over it, and I don't know, it was something pretty cool. Like, you don't really experience anything like that, so I feel like we could have like a little better tone, but.
I've got to hear this thing for myself. The musical road is on Avenue G, a standard highway next to some abandoned warehouses. There's just one small sign reading Musical Road of Lancaster. Blink and you'd miss it.
Okay, here we go. Heard it. It's a little bit of a bleak version of the William Tell Overture.
How do they make a road sound like that? To find out, I called up David Simmons Duffin.
I remember I was in my parents' kitchen and the commercial came on the TV and...
Let's drive this thing and see what it sounds like.
I was intrigued by the beginning of the commercial because I'd had some experience with these rumble strips on the road before.
It reminded him of a childhood memory.
When I was a kid, we used to drive to a park in Canada, and on the roads in Canada, they would have these rumble strips before the stop signs. And my dad would experiment with trying to play music by going different speeds over the rumble strips. And so we would talk about how fast we needed to go to make different kinds of musical scales and things. It was tricky. It didn't come out right a lot of the time, but sometimes he got the timing just right, and then we would all cheer in the car. It was fun.
But when the car in the commercial actually drives the road...
It was instant disappointment because it sounded so terrible. I basically instantly knew what they had done wrong.
Back then, David was studying for his PhD in physics. Now he's a professor at Caltech. He went straight to his computer and made a simulation of the road to test his theory.
I was able to reproduce the terrible music from the commercial. It was a neat challenge to just using my own ears and a little bit of mathematics, do the detective work and figure out what had happened.
Here's how it works. Grooves are cut into the pavement, and when the car drives over them, the car vibrates.
I knew that there's a very simple formula for the frequency that you get of the note when a car drives over a rumble strip. It's basically the velocity of the car divided by the distance between the grooves.
So to make a melody, the grooves in the road need to be precise distances apart.
And if you listen to the notes in the musical road, you can kind of tell that none of the grooves are close enough together to make the right melody.
David speculates, and this is all speculation, that the workers who cut the grooves didn't factor in the width of the grooves themselves. I asked Honda and the city of Lancaster about this, by the way. Neither responded.
It worked!
In any case, that's the Honda employees celebrating at the end of the commercial. But a lot of Lancaster residents weren't cheering. Honda originally built the road on Avenue K in downtown Lancaster. People who live nearby said it sounded like an orchestra that's constantly out of tune. Here's Vice Mayor Marvin Crist being interviewed by ABC 10.
It was a big hit by all except for the residents that lived at 60th and K. They could hear it at night.
The noise complaints were so bad that the city spent $35,000 to remove and relocate the musical road right next to the airport.
That's right. They built another version that sounds just as mediocre in a less populated part of town. Now, Lancaster's musical road is just a small town novelty. But Honda's marketing department aren't the only ones to come up with this idea. In South Korea, there's a musical road that drones a haunting rendition of Mary Had a Little Lamb to get drivers' attention if they nod off and start to swerve onto the shoulder. Mission accomplished. Then there's a stretch of Route 66 in New Mexico that rumbles America the Beautiful. But it's fallen into disrepair and you can't hear all the notes. Or the one in the Netherlands that played the regional anthem to warn drivers they're too close to the side of the road. Officials removed that one after just 2 days. One local called it psychological torture. Maybe Lancaster's version of the William Tell Overture isn't so bad after all.
For the California Report magazine, I'm Claire Wiley in Lancaster.
The last stop on our Hidden Gems road trip is in Fort Bragg on the Mendocino coast. It's a little museum on the edge of downtown.
It's like one of those little treasures that's off the beaten path. And I think when people discover it, they're pretty happy with themselves.
The Larry Spring Museum is dedicated to a guy named Larry Spring who lived in Fort Bragg most of his life. He was an amateur physicist, a keen observer of nature. And the stuff he left behind shows he had a deep curiosity about the world.
It's a constellation of objects, one might say, you know, an amalgamation of art and science and all that lies in between. And it's kind of the in-betweenness that people really are interested in.
KQED's Katrina Schwartz explored this whimsical museum to learn more about the man behind it.
Larry Spring has been dead for almost 15 years, but he can still welcome you into his shop.
Hello, you folks seem to be interested in what's in this shop here. It's an electromagnetic experimental shop. If you want to come on in, I'll show you a lot more.
Apparently that's how we would get people to come in.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like go out on the street?
He would go out in the street and get them in. Yeah.
Anne Maureen McKeating is the director of the Larry Spring Museum. Before he retired, Larry sold and repaired TVs and installed antennas. The museum building used to be a store.
He was the guy that brought TV to the North Coast.
Through his work, Larry got curious about radio waves and electromagnetism. He started making observations and doing experiments.
He was known to go and install an antenna at someone's place, you know, open the trunk of his car, bring out his experiment material, and start talking about his latest theories. So a bit of an add-on in terms of customer service, whether you wanted it or not.
Larry loved to think about physics, but he didn't like describing the world in mathematical terms. He found it too dense, and he distrusted academia. Instead, his experiments were about making the invisible world visible. He called it the school of common sense.
For Larry, it was his keen powers of observation that made the world real to him.
But what we want to do now is show you how electric motors work.
He even used his shop to teach people his theories in three-hour lectures that no one was allowed to interrupt.
When I first got into working with electromagnetic energy, I was told that if I wanted to get my things accepted, I would have to go through peer review. But it didn't take me long to find out that there are no peers for new discoveries. Because if they could,
even though not all Larry's scientific theories check out, the physical objects he created on display at the museum are delightful. Aunt Maureen gave me a tour.
These are his solar motors. So there's different iterations. This one is his levitating Mendocino brushless solar motor, and it's being held up with magnetic repulsion, so it looks like it's levitating while it spins.
All of these solar motors run on a small solar panel. Shine light on them and they spin or start a mechanism.
Here he's attached solar panels to a music box. I think they're wonderful. They're like little kinetic sculptures to me, and he's clearly taken time to make them aesthetically pleasing.
Aunt Maureen never knew Larry personally. She inherited the building and the collection from a friend who used to work with Larry. Rather than seeing it as a burden, she was intrigued.
It's probably more interesting to an outsider. So for me, like, it's a dream to be working with this collection. You know, because I've always loved natural history. I've loved small, quirky museums. So to have the opportunity to make this into something and to get more people through here, it's really fantastic.
She says she talked to Larry's family, but legacies like this can be complicated. And a lot of times people don't know what to do with the sheer volume of stuff. It might even seem like junk.
Oftentimes, when people pass, the collections get scattered to the four winds. I think people really love it because you don't usually see all of this sort of material stuff in one place.
She's come to know Larry through his objects, his papers, and by talking to local people who knew him.
I've come to really respect his curiosity, his way of seeing the world. You know, I call it his spirit of amateur inquiry, which, when I first thought about that, seemed really quite delightful.
His theories, to be honest, many of which I don't even understand, were also never really accepted by the mainstream, despite his efforts. Larry disdained peer review and thought academia was full of followers who didn't want to rock the boat.
Larry also made these stick figures that he called Little Woods Creatures.
These figurines are some of the most artistic and whimsical pieces in the museum. Aunt Maureen says a lot of visitors are drawn to them.
So, you know, if he was on the beach or in a forest and saw something that looked like a beaver or a dancing person, he would say, here it is, a beaver or dancing person, and made it so.
Larry was good at seeing the potential in natural objects, and then he'd carve the wood to draw out the natural form that originally inspired him.
But he didn't identify as an artist. He identified as an experimenter. So it's really pretty interesting because a lot of people experience this place as just kind of an overwhelming curiosity cabinet.
One of the other big hits in the museum is a 1950s era rock dinner party.
Well, we've got rocks and minerals that look like food.
It's exactly what it sounds like, a yellow formica table set for a dinner party. But everything on the table is made out of rocks.
We have rocks that look like pieces of meat that have been sliced.
Cauliflower, a goblet with polished garnets inside that look like wine.
We've got ham and cheese over here. So Swiss cheese with holes in it.
That's actually pretty amazing. It looks marginally appetizing.
Yeah, I know. You gotta, but watch your teeth, right? Yeah.
Honestly, I was into it. The other display that captivated me was what Larry called his picture rocks.
His label for this particular cabinet is the oldest pictures in the world painted by Mother Nature millions of years ago.
They're cross-sections of rock that somehow look like landscape paintings. One looks like the rocky Mendocino coastline, another like a starry sky.
They do look like pictures. People use their imagination to create something out of what they're seeing.
In a world where the internet reigns supreme, this museum is oddly refreshing. It's a testament to a man who spent his whole life wondering about the world, noticing the neat things in it, and trying to understand the forces around him.
It's a very place-based kind of thing. You know, places change. I don't think it's a bad thing to show the passage of time with these kinds of artifacts. In a sense, I look at it as curated decay, in a way.
This is a tiny nonprofit museum run by Anne Maureen and a handful of volunteers. They don't have the resources to preserve all these whimsical artifacts Larry made out of the materials he had on hand. No one item is extraordinary, but collectively, it's pretty cool.
Its value is in it being all together in this particular place, in this particular building.
This was Larry's place. First his business, and later his experimentation center and classroom. So it's fitting that Larry's still hanging around.
His ashes are still here in the museum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're under his favorite lamp, which is the lamp made of lace agate and beautiful burl.
So they're in there?
Yeah.
Wow, that's unique.
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to be here, you know? Yeah. He's making sure that things don't change too much.
That visit to the Larry Spring Museum in Fort Bragg was produced by KQED's Katrina Schwartz. And by the way, if you want to check out the museum for yourself, you got to make an appointment first. And that's it for the California Report magazine for this week. You can check out all of our hidden gem stories at kqed.org/hidden gems. We've got some really cool ones, like a roller skating rink in a church.
One lap is all you need. When you come back around here, you'll be going, hey, that's pretty cool.
A Prohibition-era bowling alley.
All the bowling alleys where we are fancy and everything is plastic, and this is all wood and leather. The aesthetics make it look like it's been here forever.
Oh my God, a strike! Who did that for me? Oh, yeah!
We're a production of KQED in San Francisco. Our senior editor is Victoria Mauleon. We had editing help this week from Katrina Schwartz, Susie Racho, and me. Susie Racho is our director-producer with help this week from Jessica Carissa. Our sound engineer is Brendan Willard. Lucen Mendel is our intern. And I'm Sasha Coca. You can check out all of our California stories on our podcast, The California Report Magazine. Your state, your stories.
Support for KQED Podcasts comes from Star One Credit Union, now offering real-time money movement with Instant Pay. Make transfers and payments instantly between financial institutions. Online or through Star One's mobile app, Star One Credit Union, in your best interest. Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.